Live on Tape, Work in Progress, a World at Work podcast about work, life, and everything in between. With award-winning radio host Tom Alexander and Workspan's Not Safe for Work columnist Charles Epstein. Here are your hosts, Tom and Charles.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Work in Progress. My name's Tom Alexander, and as always, I am joined by my good friend and podcast partner. It is Charles Epstein. Hey, Charles.
Hey, Tom. Really looking forward to today's conversation with Peter Pezoras, the serial entrepreneur's serial entrepreneur.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I like that, the serial entrepreneur, but we're not sure if that's what he has for breakfast.
The breakfast of champions.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Good point.
Yes. Anyway, Peter was founder of Commissioner.com, a pioneering sports, fantasy sports platform, yeah, which led him to being inducted into the Fantasy Sports Hall of Fame. Where is that? Do you have any idea?
I don't know, but if it's a Fantasy Sports Hall of Fame, maybe it's not on Earth.
Right. It could be anywhere.
It could be anywhere.
It could be a figment of somebody's imagination. And in fact, probably should be.
Yeah.
It'd be perfectly appropriate. Anyway, we need to find that out.
But listen, it's backed up by a heck of a lot of stats. I can tell you that. A lot of analytics. You know? No Hall of Fame comes with more analytics than the Fantasy Sports Hall of Fame.
Yeah, there's some inherent contradiction in terms, I think, in that. But right. I don't know. Anyway, Mr. Pezoras was also a founding member of several social media companies, such as Multiply and Glip, and is currently the CEO of CodeStream, which is basically a collaboration platform for coders, which is kind of an interesting concept. So interested in talking to him about all of this. And, you know, Tom, what I find particularly interesting is here's a guy who's been responsible for five exits, and on his LinkedIn page, it mentions that he's always made money for his investors. And what's kind of interesting, you know, you talk about fantasy Sports Hall of Fame, you'd be in the Business Hall of Fame if you had one major exit, two relatively good exits, three exits, you're pretty much a lock. Five exits, I mean, you know, you're already in the immortal.
Yeah, the Pantheon, right?
Yeah, the Pantheon, exactly. So he's been responsible or involved in five exits. But I see that he mentions he's involved with Y Combinator, which is a prestigious incubated. We had the CEO, Taro Fukuyama, I believe, from Fond, who was on.
Yes.
Who also came through that incubator, who had a fascinating origin story, as does Peter. But, you know, going through some of the background on him, maybe he'll share that with us when we talk. But in any case, I'm not sure if he was involved with Y Combinator with CodeStream or his previous gig, we'll ask him. What's really interesting, regardless, is that here you have a guy who you think has seen it all, done it all, yet he attaches himself to Y Combinator or comes through Y Combinator. And again, this is something I want to ask him, but I assume it's sort of an implicit acknowledgement that even for him, there's still something to learn.
Yeah. And, you know, it just seems like every great business person, innovator, entrepreneur, artist always remains a student. You know, I just find that a common thing. You know, if you think you've got it all figured out, you kind of stop growing, right? And I think that's exactly what it is in his case, that he's wide open to the idea of like, hey, I don't know everything. There's a lot more to learn. There's always something more to learn. Hence there you go. That's where the success comes from.
Yeah. And in fact, as a little bit of an aside, that's sort of what World at Work's business is. And with all of the credentialing and all the continuing education and so forth, it's not just to add stuff to build out the resume, but this is practical stuff that allows you or enables you to do your job a little bit better. And what's also kind of interesting, I find that, you know, you read about generational conflict in the workplace. You have baby boomers and Generation X's, millennials, and all this stuff. Like the lines are drawn, and there's inherent conflict. And baby boomers assume, hey, I've been around, I've seen it all, I know it all. And Mr. Millennial, Ms. Generation Xer, don't tell me But, you know, I think it is healthy to go into any kind of situation, as you say, with an open mind, and you could learn from anybody. And everybody has something to share. And I think it's a good thing. It's a healthy thing to have an open mind. In a previous podcast, we talked about, and I forget what the topic was exactly, but we were talking about, you know, when you have experience, you go into situations knowing that you have that experience to draw on. And if you have a deadline looming, you're not going to freak out because you've been there before and you've always met the challenge. You're going to meet the challenge this time. But I think that confidence needs to be combined with some degree of humility and an openness to learning. I think it's just a very healthy thing and it's a productive thing.
Couldn't agree more. Very much looking forward to Peter Pezaris coming up next right here on Work in Progress. He's Charles Epstein. I'm Tom Alexander. Back in a moment.
Pay equity matters, and not just because it reduces legal risk. It has profound ramifications on company culture, engagement, recruiting, and retaining top people. Syndio is a data science-powered software platform that enables modern organizations to close the gender pay gap while reducing costly unwanted attrition and improving true engagement and collaboration. Studies show the pay gap will be around for another 200 years. 200 years! Go to www.synd.io. SYND.io.
If you dial back a couple of decades, our next guest was on the leading edge of what's become a billion-dollar fantasy sports industry as founder of Commissioner.com, now CBS Fantasy. He's also been at the forefront of such social media entities as Multiply and Glip. He's in the Fantasy Sports Hall of Fame and is currently the CEO of CodeStream, an open source extension for VS Code, Visual Studio, and JetBrains. And when you look up the term serial entrepreneur in the dictionary, you'll see a profile picture of today's guest. It's Peter Pezaris, and he joins us now. Peter, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Please say hi to my podcast partner and good friend, Charles Epstein.
Hi, Charles. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Peter. Where are you calling in from?
I'm currently in South Florida. I've got a summer home down here in Delray Beach.
Ah, very nice. So you're actually within striking distance of moi. So very nice. Yeah, it's a very nice time of year. You know, going through some of your background on LinkedIn and so forth, I see that you are a Y Combinator alum, the second we've had on the pod, by the way. Mm-hmm. Curious, which of your companies was developed with their support?
It's actually my current company, CodeStream. And that brings up a curiosity, which is when we first applied to Y Combinator, I had already sold, founded, built, and sold three companies. And so some of my peers asked, why would you apply to Y Combinator? It's an incubator to teach people how to build companies. You've already done it three times. And I was initially a little bit hesitant, but after joining the program and finding out how much there still is to learn, I'm so glad we applied. It's such a fantastic program for all types of founders.
Oh, yeah, that's really interesting. Speaking of CodeStream, tell us a little bit more of what CodeStream does.
CodeStream is a developer collaboration platform, and we help engineering teams make it easier to discuss, review, and understand code. The way we do this is through a set of tools and services that make the editor that engineers use to write code. So engineers have specialized editors, sort of like Microsoft Word or Google Docs, but specifically for developers. And so what CodeStream does is it adds additional functionality to those editors to make them more collaborative. So you can have better communication with your peers as you're writing code.
Interesting. Yeah, I want to come back to that in a little bit later in our conversation.
Yeah, sure. Coding, of course, can be done from anywhere, particularly with a tool like CodeStream. I assume you've been largely virtual well before COVID, I guess, huh?
Yeah, it's interesting. A big part of our story is that the team behind CodeStream has been together through all of my startups. And one of the peculiarities to our team is that we've almost never been co-located. There's always been a few of us here and a few of us there. And that started actually with our first company. We were in different parts of New York, and our collaboration tool of choice was the telephone. We would just call each other and put it on speaker, and that's how we collaborated. Now with tools like Zoom and CodeStream, it makes our jobs a lot easier to work together if we're not physically present in the same space.
Yeah, I'm guessing that coders are kind of used to working this way virtually, part of their culture, I guess. On the pod, we typically talk about company culture, what it is, why it's important, and how to maintain it. How would you describe CodeStream's culture? How would you describe it as a talented coder if you're looking to recruit, or what are you looking for there?
Our culture is somewhat unique, due in no small part to the fact that I just mentioned, which is that the four of the founders plus one additional person, we've been working together forever. So these are guys I met in the computer science program at Carnegie Mellon University. And after college, we got together over beers one night and decided to start a company. And we've been working together ever since. So it's been 26 years. I've had the pleasure to be working successfully with my best friends building businesses. So that type of culture starts, I guess, at the top and then permeates throughout the rest of the organization. And what that translates into is that it's very important for us to be friends with each other in addition to being colleagues. So a big emphasis about our corporate culture is in the personal side of work. We make sure that our Zoom calls aren't always about work. We take the time to talk to each other about what's going on in current events, or we socialize through Zoom, you know, because of COVID and we're all remote now. And we really emphasize that aspect to make sure that people make personal connections with each other in addition to just being colleagues.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I'm assuming over those 26 years, you know, it seems like you all assume similar roles from company to company.
Yeah, that's right. One of the challenges that we first had with our first business is we were five guys and none of us really knew what we wanted to do and what role we wanted to play. And we ended up struggling a little bit because we had something that we called the five-headed monster, which was that making any big decision became difficult because everybody felt that as an equal partner, everybody had an equal say. And importantly, everybody felt like they had to weigh in on every single issue. And this became kind of a drag on our decision-making process. So what happened over the course of a couple of years is that we practically drew straws, like who's going to do what. And I got the short straw, I guess, and ended up being the CEO. But I think everybody sort of gravitated towards the roles that they filled the best. And once we established a little bit of a reporting structure, I think everybody was happier because just having that clarity made things more efficient.
So over all these years, you've never had a situation where somebody said, hey, Peter, you know what? I wouldn't mind being the CEO this time.
Actually, one of those five guys did have that itch. And over the years, you know, we've all had side projects and things like that. But one of my partners, Michael, he decided he wanted to pursue it. So he took a couple of years out of the 26 to go off and run with a dating app idea that he had, but unfortunately it didn't really go very far, and so he jumped back into our cadre.
I see. Properly chastened, I'm assuming.
I don't know, but one thing that I will say is that being a CEO isn't for everybody, and being an entrepreneur and a founder, there's a skill set, not only a skill set, but a mindset, and you have to be really willing to accept defeat, because it becomes a part of your daily job that things are going to go wrong. And ultimately, as the CEO, it's your fault. So if you're the type of person that gets really upset or anxious when things don't go your way, that becomes very difficult to be a successful CEO, because it's really going to weigh on you mentally. And I think that's something that's not really talked about enough among founders, is the mental strain of being a CEO and an entrepreneur. It's a very, very challenging thing. And people, I think, just because of the bravado, and they assume that in order to portray a CEO, they have to always be strong, that they don't even acknowledge the fact that it's really, really hard.
Yeah. You know, we spoke with somebody some months ago, last year maybe, who was part of a network of CEOs. And the idea was CEOs really don't have anybody in the organization they could lean on for these types of issues. So it's a peer group, and they could talk about these things as peers. And it's obviously a very healthy thing. You know, we're kind of talking about your evolution as a CEO, which sort of leads me into the next question. Just about everyone we've spoken with has discussed the challenges of maintaining business continuity over these very trying past few months, and the lessons they've learned. Given your track record with several very successful companies, as you say in your LinkedIn profile, you made money for every investor, knock on wood. Mm-hmm. You've obviously had to be flexible and agile with each venture you've led. What lessons, if any, did you learn during this period? Anything that changed any of your preconceived notions about running a successful enterprise and keeping people focused and doing their best work? And interestingly, you talk about the Y Combinator, so I'm assuming there was, you know, that was also part of it. But I'm curious about, you know, COVID and these past year, in fact.
Sure. We've faced fewer challenges than most, I will say. And we're very thankful for that. Well, this pandemic is not to be dismissed or downplayed. And I almost feel guilty saying that, in a way, COVID has been good for our business, because we're a tool that helps engineers work remotely. And all engineering teams are now forced to work remotely. So we've benefited from that. And as far as how it impacted our team, we were already a remote team. And that actually had its roots not only from Y Combinator, but prior to Y Combinator, as I mentioned, we've never all been co-located. And when we started CodeStream, we made the decision that we weren't even going to try. We weren't going to rent an office. We were all going to work from wherever we wanted to, and we would use exclusively online tools. And what was interesting is that in our batch at Y Combinator, which was in winter 18, there were about 130 companies in the batch. I would say the majority of the ones that we spoke to had similar plans. There's a company called GitLab who recently raised money at a $4 billion valuation. So they're very successful, still privately held. And they're rather famously fully remote. So they've got some 2,000 employees, but their mindset is so geared exclusively towards remote working that when they have employees that work in the same city, they don't even allow them to go into the same co-working space. They want everybody to be completely isolated from everybody else so that everybody's on a level playing field and everybody uses the remote tools in order to collaborate. So we saw their success while we were at Y Combinator, and a lot of other companies did as well, and wanted to replicate that because it gives us an incredible pool from which to hire. We can hire somebody from anywhere around the world. And as long as we all are relying on these remote collaboration tools, it doesn't really matter whether they're next door or five time zones away.
Our guest is Peter Pizarris. He's the CEO of CodeStream, an open source extension for VS Code, Visual Studio, and JetBrains. Peter, beginning with Commissioner.com, which you brought and eventually sold, to Sportsline, now CBS Sports. You've been a founding member of a string of companies and have been responsible for 5 exits. Now, most entrepreneurs would consider themselves lucky to score 1 exit and fade into the sunset. What is it that continues to drive you, that makes you want to roll up your sleeves first thing in the morning when many, if not most, would rather just play 18 holes and luxuriate over a 2-hour lunch?
That's a good question. My mom asked me that all the time. I love golf. But I think what I love more is being able to create, and being able to do that with my best friends is something that I pinch myself every day. So I think it's ultimately all about the team we've put together and just the joy and satisfaction of being able to create value with your best buddies. I truly love my job. I love what I do. I love the people that I work with, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. Now, having said that, all good things eventually come to an end. And so I'm not sure if after CodeStream, whether there will be another startup after this or not. But luckily I don't have to think about that for a while, because we're very focused on making CodeStream successful. And that's more than a full-time job.
How long has it been in existence now?
CodeStream's about 3 years old, a little less. It's a product that required quite a bit of R&D before we brought it to market. So there's a lot of a big technical lift, as they say, that we had to invest in building the infrastructure and the technology in order to achieve the user experiences that we were trying to create. And so in a way, we're just getting started, because that product is now, thankfully, starting to really see some legs. The traction within the marketplace is really starting to take off. So we're very thankful for that. And it's been a lot of hard work, but it's good to see that hard work starting to pay off.
Yeah. Oh, great. Peter, what advice would you give to an entrepreneur who's got a good idea, solid business plan, and dreams of a Peter Pizarro-like exit? And just one, as one exit.
Sure.
For most people will do.
The one piece of advice, I guess a couple of pieces of advice. One piece of advice would be, don't put too much stock in your idea. One of the things that I've learned over the years of talking to entrepreneurs is that you'll keep hearing the same ideas over and over and over again. And it's pretty rare that it's the idea that made the company super successful. What you hear much more often is that it's the dedication of the founder that made the company successful. Through Y Combinator, we had the opportunity to hear from a number of very successful founders and hear their founding stories. And it was remarkable to me how many of them failed 5 times before they succeeded. So it's really the persistence of the founder and the execution of the team to bring your idea to reality, and having that perseverance that when things go wrong, just try something else and keep trying and keep trying and keep trying until something works. And that's really the story of just about every successful company I know. It's very rare that somebody's good idea translates directly into success. And it's really what happens between the idea and that success is going to determine the winners from the losers.
Yeah.
So it's work hard, be super committed to what you're doing, pour your heart and soul into it, and keep trying different things. Keep experimenting to find the thing that works.
Yeah. By the way, the guy we did have on previously, who, as I said, was a Y Combinator alum, Taro Fukuyama. He founded a company called Fond. And I love hearing entrepreneurs' founding stories, or the origin story. And his was, he and his partner came over from Japan. And of course they came, where are they going to go? To build a company, get investment, Silicon Valley, knowing nothing, I guess, to some extent, being an entrepreneur, naivete sometimes is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, knowing too much may be a hindrance. And the core of their founding story is writing a good part of their business plan, or putting the finishing touches on a presentation in a parking lot of a Taco Bell.
Right.
Those stories are just great. And, you know, from small acorns, great oaks grow, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When I applied to Y Combinator, the one last piece in order to submit the application was you had to record a 60-second video of yourself pitching your product and saying why it's going to be successful. That's the one last piece we had to do. But I had to run to the airport because I had to catch a flight, and the application was due at midnight that night because we were convinced very late in the cycle to apply. So while I'm in the airport, in the gate, about to board the plane, I'm trying to record this video, and I can't tell you how many times I had to do it because I would get like 30 seconds into my pitch and then the PA would come over, now boarding out of gate 37, and I would have to start again. And so luckily I finally got 60 clean seconds to get it recorded. And now I'm like literally walking down the jet bridge with my laptop in my hand, tethered to my cell phone as it's trying to upload to YouTube so I can create a video to send to Y Combinator. So the good news is that finally got submitted and we got in.
Well, you could have used that PA stuff just to sort of show that under great pressure you can do this elevator pitch.
That's right.
Yeah. Great sense of pressure, Peter. The airlines aren't giving you a break, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Back when we used to fly.
Yeah, I have one more question, but I will mention that, you know, I recall a story you'd shared once about getting Commissioner off the ground. You know, and that there was no template, you know, or the early days of fantasy sports. Since there was no template, you had to make things up as you went along. I mean, do you find that that's a commonality even with these new things you take on?
When we started Commissioner, we didn't know anything about fantasy. And that was a big challenge for us because we were trying to create this new category of online fantasy sports, which nobody had really done before. And yet the people we would try to speak to within the industry, they were fantasy experts, and they assumed we were, since we were trying to do so, but we were just technologists. We were the web side of moving fantasy to the web, and we were trying to learn as quickly as we could about fantasy. And I remember one interview, we got on some radio show where Mike was being interviewed by a host, and he said, "So who's on your fantasy team?" And Mike was like, "Oh my God, I don't have a fantasy team. Who's Doc Gooden? Who else? He's like trying to think of names because he literally didn't even have a team. And that was part of the, you know, you mentioned, Charles, the naivete. Well, we didn't know that you shouldn't know something about fantasy before you build a fantasy company, but we learned about it as quickly as we could. But it was a big challenge, you know, and in those early days, that was the first company we started. And the probably the best story from those days is that we started that company while we still had full-time jobs. And because it became so demanding, sleep was sacrificed. So I spent the first month of that business sleeping about 1 hour a night for an entire month. And that's not an exaggeration. I was pushed to my physical limits. And so I would fall asleep while I was at the office during the day. And I called up my partner, Mike, and I said, "I can't go on. I can't keep doing this." And he said, "I'll tell you what I do." I said, "What? What? Help me, please." And he says, "I go into the bathroom and I take a nap." And I was like, "Oh my God, that's brilliant. I'm going to go do that." So I went into the restroom, sat down on the toilet, and relaxed. And there, right at the perfect height, was the toilet paper dispenser. So I leaned my head forward. I relaxed and took a beautiful 20-minute nap. And I woke up refreshed. But then as I was washing my hands in the sink, I look up. And in the mirror, it says, imprinted into my forehead, "If roll is empty, slide cover to right."
That is hilarious.
It was at that moment I knew that maybe I was pushing myself a little bit too far. And I went in and talked to my boss. And even though we had no revenue and I had no money, I quit my job and we scraped together enough to pay me $10,000 a year while I was living in Manhattan. That's not enough money to live on, by the way. So I had to give up my apartment. Slept on the floor of the office, which didn't have heat or hot water.
Wow.
And so it was a real struggle, but a super rewarding experience because I was doing it with my best buddies. And, you know, we came out the other side with a successful exit. And so now we can say we've been through war together. And that's, I think, a big part of that bonding that's kept us together all these years.
That is a great story.
That's your Taco Bell story. last question, Peter. As we're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel now, anything on your bucket list once the pandemic is fully in the rear view?
Well, I'm of Greek descent, and one of my favorite things in the world to do is spend a chunk of time in the Greek islands every summer, and I've been unable to do that because of COVID. So I think that would be number one on my list, is getting back to Greece and enjoying some fresh grilled fish that was caught that day.
Wow.
Yes. It's no secret that I have experienced that myself, and it is as wonderful as you paint that picture. Mm. Well, Peter, we really do appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me. It was a fun talk.
Peter Pizarris is the CEO of CodeStream, an open source extension for VS Code's Visual Studio and JetBrains. He joined us today from Delray, Florida. This is Work in Progress. We'll be back in just a moment.
Data, the mantra of business today. It's nothing new to World at Work. It's no small feat that they've been collecting data on salary issues for its salary budget survey for more than 45 years. Think about it, 45 years. Curious to know how your company stacks up? HR execs in the know rely on World at Work's salary budget survey. Shouldn't you too? Go to worldatwork.org/salarybudgetsurvey to learn more.
Wrapping things up now on Work in Progress, along with Charles Epstein. I'm Tom Alexander, and Peter Pizarris, Charles, our guest today from CodeStream. And like you said at the outset, five exits, successful exits.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It is amazing. It is amazing. And yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we were speculating what business of his came through or attached themselves to Y Combinator. Turns out this most recent one, CodeStream, and he himself questioned, why do we need to do this? But he says it's been a very, very good experience. And again, supports the conversation we were having about the value of being open and having some humility and understanding the value, or understanding that you don't know everything. Nobody knows everything. And in most cases, per William Goldman, most people don't know anything at all.
That's right.
You know, they're just groping through the darkness. But I'll tell you, I have to say, I'm a little bit jealous. Well, five exits is something to be jealous about, but
a little bit, right?
You know, that in every incarnation, in every business that he founded, developed, sold, was acquired, he got to work with his buddies.
Yeah.
How cool is that? The idea of your best friend, you go from gig to gig to gig. You know each other very, very well. You deal with things as friends, as colleagues. I'm sure not every day is a day in paradise, but you work through it. And it appears that they've remained friends and had healthy relationships and have shared in the fruits of their work. It's just what an amazing thing. What an amazing privilege.
It is. And, you know, you don't have that work out all the time, because you know, there certainly are enough stories where the opposite happens. You know, you think, hey, this guy's my best friend. We're going to work one, you know, miracles together. And you wind up not being friends anymore. That's happened. We all have heard those stories. So look, he's a lucky guy. But, you know, in our short time visiting with him, he's just a very easygoing, kind of measured, you know, guy. Just, he comes off as being somebody that is wide open to ideas and but serious at the same time about his work. but not so serious as much about himself. He's serious about what he's doing, but doesn't take himself so seriously, right? That it gets in the way.
Yeah, you know, I know you and I are desperately trying to get two favorite people of ours on the show, whose musicianship, whose artistry, and I don't think it's too much to use the word humanity, the both of us admire, Susan Tedeschi and Derek Trucks.
Right.
And I once heard an interview with them where Derek Trucks said, you know, we take our music seriously, but we don't take ourselves seriously. We're not curing cancer here. And I just thought that was just an amazingly balanced perspective to have, not just for, you know, the stuff that they're doing, but for what Peter Pizarro is doing, and for anybody for that matter, unless in fact you are curing cancer. But
right.
In which case, yes, you're entitled to think of yourself as highly as you care to. As highly as you care to.
You get the buy on that, the pass, right?
Exactly.
You skip the first round, right? Is that
And it is kind of an interesting thing what they're doing. And obviously, they've been pretty much business as usual through the pandemic, because they're coders for the most part, and developing a platform that enables coders to collaborate wherever they may be doing their coding. So, and obviously, their business, they've been in business for 3 years, you know, predates the pandemic, but it's almost like they were pandemic proof. But yeah, fascinating business, fascinating guy, incredible that he's been able to shepherd five companies across the finish line. And I'm assuming this will be the sixth.
I have a feeling you're right. Well, we thank Peter Pizarro for taking time out of his busy schedule. It's an understatement to join us. And we'll be back again next time with a brand new show. Thanks so much for listening. For Charles Epstein, I'm Tom Alexander. This is Work in Progress. We'll see you again. So long, everybody.
This has been Work in Progress, a World at Work podcast about work, life, and everything in between, with award-winning radio host Tom Alexander and Workspan's Not Safe for Work columnist Charles Epstein. For more, visit worldatwork.org/workinprogress. That's worldatwork.org/workinprogress. Join us next week for another edition of Work in Progress.